Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity. I've been looking forward to this for a number of years and finally was able to make it here, so I really appreciate it. What I'm going to share with you today is my journey through analytics. It actually started in the airline industry, worked for two different airlines, and then eventually to Disney. I've been at Disney now for 21 years. So as you can imagine, every great company has great lawyers, including Disney. And so they asked me to read this. So the views expressed are my own and not necessarily those of the Walt Disney Company. Any analytics strategies or techniques attributed to Disney are not necessarily those that Disney's use, it's maybe used in any given situation. So I'm going to clear now. I don't have to worry about getting in any trouble with my legal department, but so it be. So today I'm going to share with you a little bit about who we are. I'm going to talk about how did we evolve over those 21 years. And then lastly, I'm going to share a fair amount of some key lessons I learned between the 21 years at Disney as well as the lessons I learned in the airline industry as well in applying analytics. So starting with who are we? So we are a centralized organization within the Disney company that supports the entire enterprise when it comes to analytics. Primarily what we are doing is we are building software development for analytics solutions to solve the wide array of business problems you can imagine in a diverse company such as Disney. With that, the way it works, we basically are contractors, if you will, or internal consultants for the Disney company, and all the work we do is via SLA, service level agreements, where they pay for our services. With that, our mission statement is to be the leader in the design, development, and integration of innovative decision science solutions to improve the Walt Disney Company's business performance. There's two key words I want to call out there. The first is the integration. What I can tell you, I've been doing this now for over 30 years. If analytics are going to fail, it's 9 times out of 10, it's going to be about the integration. Whether it's the integration of the data, integration of the science into the actual business. And you'll hear me talk about that a lot today. The second word I underline is about the innovation. I would argue analytics is in its absolute infancy as to where it can go, whether it's because of the improvement in processing power allowing us to solve and optimize more difficult business problems, whether it's the ever-evolving, changing business, or whether it's simply with machine learning and AI and where that's taking us. So when you think about where analytics is today and where it's, what it'll look like just 5 years from now, I expect it to look dramatically different. So this is my organization. So the way we're structured is we're structured around common business problems. So on the top there is what we call our MSI group, Management Science and Integration Group. Think of them as verticals, if you will, within my organization. And they're organized around common business problems. The first one is the director of our marketing analytics. So when you think about the analytics, whether it's for ABC or studios, when it comes to marketing and the effectiveness of marketing, it really doesn't matter what industry. The business problem is very similar, and therefore the approaches and learnings you can use, you can certainly leverage. The next area is the group that focuses around, I say, more traditional B2C. Think of like pricing and revenue management. So when I think about the work we were able to do for the Broadway shows like Lion King or Aladdin, or the work we were able to do for Disney Cruise Line or for our hotels, again, very much a very common business problem where you have limited inventory, and how do you think about that inventory and how do you effectively use that inventory? Then the last vertical is the sales optimization, personalization, and research work. So when I think about the work that we're doing in parks and resorts for personalization, how do we make sure when a guest is going through that vacation planning process, how do we provide them the most relevant product as soon as possible? The most relevant content, the most relevant imagery, that's all falls under personalization. The exact same thing is what we also use for a media company. So when we think about when we have someone coming in like Procter & Gamble and they want to buy some advertising space, what's the most relevant product for them given the audience? And that's where we use the sales optimization. They also own the forecasting piece of all our inventory, so like the Nielsen ratings and our impressions for all our digital. Underneath those three verticals, we have two horizontals. The first is the centralized decision science team. This is the folks that are typically actually solving the problem themselves. Where the MSI folks, what they're typically doing is trying to go in, understand the business problem, and then relay that business problem back to the science team so they can solve it appropriately. Additionally, what they're trying to do is make sure once the science has been figured out, to make sure the end user, if you will, our clients, actually know how to use those solutions, understand it appropriately, and to make sure they're effectively brought into the day-to-day processes that they have today. The decision science team is really focused on that software development, if you will, and the analytics around that. We also have what we call the data integration group. As you can imagine, in a company as diverse as Disney, ESPN handles their data very differently than ABC or A&E or even the third parties like Nielsen. And so how do you get that data and bring it in and ingest it into the science in an appropriate way? And as I think everyone here knows, if there's going to be a project that's going to fail, that's another area of high risk, which is simply integrating that data and digesting that data in an appropriate manner. So that's how we're organized in order to solve all those very diverse business problems across the Disney company. In total, we're about 150 cast members, 50-plus PhDs. Most of those PhDs actually reside in the decision science team, while some may reside in the other areas as well. So how did we evolve? So if I go back to 1995, I was actually brought into Walt Disney Parks and Resorts, particularly at Walt Disney World at the time, to really solve the revenue management problem of their hotels. Back then when we did revenue management, the whole purpose was really about the forecasting of demand, so operations knew how to think about labor. There wasn't much focus on the revenue side whatsoever. And so when we first got started, we brought in, I'd say, more business rule solutions at first in order to gain some value, then ultimately started bringing in some true science solutions. Because those science solutions were able to drive significant value for the company, it got a lot of attention from our senior executives. And they started to ask us, well, what else can you do? And so we started looking for other areas within parks and resorts, such as food and beverage revenue management. One of the key components in food and beverage revenue management is actually understanding your sellable inventory. So unlike a hotel where I can go out there and just simply count the number of rooms to understand my capacity, in a food and beverage restaurant, in a table service restaurant, you can't just simply count the chairs in your restaurant. You have to forecast the turn times of a party of four, of a party of six. Does that turn time change throughout the day based on time of day or day of week? And so we started developing tools like that. We also started developing tools like sales optimization. So if you called our res center, what's the most appropriate product to be offering you? So we started getting areas like that and continued to drive a lot of interest in the value we were able to bring to parks and resorts. And then it was about 10 years ago, I had an opportunity to do a presentation of Bob Iger on the areas of opportunity that we were able to leverage in parks and resorts, but how we also can think about leveraging that beyond parks and resorts to the rest of the enterprise. And so we started brainstorming about some areas of opportunity. And so what we did was we actually worked with ESPN, who was our first client. And the first thing we started doing there was just simply forecasting their inventory. No different than it is for food and beverage, you have to understand their sellable inventory, which are Nielsen ratings. And we saw huge gains in doing that and improving upon their forecasts of demand. The next thing you know, we started finding other opportunities like forecasting impressions, and again, finding significant value. Building sales optimization tools so we can provide relevant product to their clients, no different than we had to do for parks and resorts. Next big client was our Broadway folks. There, the whole idea was trying to figure out, you know, given all their demand, because they have such a great product, how do you think about the actual demand for those different products out there, where it was Lion King or Aladdin? And so one of our key highlights, I would say, was the publication of the work we've done with Lion King. So what we were able to do is actually make Lion King one of the highest grossing shows of all time. Even though it's not the longest running show, we do not charge the highest prices, and it's not in the largest theaters. Now, to start with, more than anything else I got to call out, it's a phenomenal product. If it wasn't for the fact that it wasn't a phenomenal product, we wouldn't have the success that we had. But given that phenomenal product, it gave us a huge opportunity to go in there, help them think about the analytics around that demand that they have. How do you think about the pricing? How do you actually optimize their existing inventory, if you will? And so we had multiple articles written about the work we've done. I've even had an individual come up to me one time and say, oh, you're the algorithm. So no, I'm not the algorithm, but we did do the work on the actual solution itself. Another big highlight we had was this year, we actually won the Informs Award for Operations Research and Analytics. It's recognized as one of the top companies in applying analytics. It was a special honor for us, especially because the United States Air Force also won it with us. And for those who don't know, operations research started in the military at the very beginning, and so to be recognized with them was a huge, huge honor for us. So during this whole time period, I've had quite a few lessons I've learned, and some of them were difficult, to say the least, and others I'll share with you as well. So one of the first lessons I'm going to share with you is about the investment profile. And what I mean by this is simply, when we think about analytics, we're also trying to figure out, you know, do we have the money to invest in capital this year or not? And if not, should we forgo it for some future time period? Well, I'm going to share a little story with you that I experienced personally For those folks don't know or have never heard of, there was an airline many years ago called People Express Airlines. I actually worked in the marketing department, as part of the pricing department then. People Express was the darling of deregulation in the airline industry. So prior to deregulation, if you wanted to get a fare approved, you had to get the U.S. government to approve that fare. So as you can imagine, the bureaucracy of getting that done meant more than likely fares went up, not down. And when the airline industry became deregulated, it opened up huge opportunities for low-cost carriers such as People Express. At People Express, our cost per available seat mile was a nickel, compared to everyone else's was closer to a dime. That gave us huge pricing power because our costs were so low. And so our prices, as an example, between Newark and Boston were $19 one way. The closest competition back then would have been Eastern or Delta. That would have been over $100. So as you can imagine, it gave us a lot of pricing power and a lot of advantages. We ended up growing to be the fifth largest airline in under 5 years. We achieved $1 billion in revenue in under 5 years. So growth was amazing. We actually received every 18 days, one new aircraft for 5 years. That's how fast we were growing. So a huge success story at the time. Now, one of the things that was interesting was back then there was no such thing as revenue management, which simply meant if American Airlines or Eastern Airlines wanted to match our fares, what they had to do was match every single seat. There was no mouse print at the bottom that said seats were limited back then. However, January 17th, 1985, I remember it well, it was a snowy day in Newark, and there was a full-page ad that announced American Airlines Super Saver fare. For the first time, an airline was able to match People Express because they were able to forecast their demand and understand any excess inventory they had. They could go ahead and match People Express and support that through the revenue management and analytics. And all they had to do was put in a fine print in the bottom of that ad that said seats were limited. I could tell you there was panic going throughout People Express because we never had anyone that was able to match us before. A little over a year later, we had a choice between bankruptcy or merging with Continental. That's how fast the analytics impacted us as an airline industry. And the lesson in all this is, as you think about investing in analytics and you're trying to figure out, do I forgo the analytics today, knowing that all I'm really going to do is forgo revenues for those first couple years where I don't have analytics, rest assured that's not all you're forgoing. You could be forgoing your base demand, your base customers, as your consumers, as your competition figures out how to use analytics in a better fashion than you do. The next story I'm going to talk about is about evangelizing analytics. So we actually have a term we got a trademark on, a registered trademark on, we call evangelytics, kind of a play on words, if you will, because it is so important at Disney. As everyone's aware, Disney is definitely a very creative content company, a very guest-focused company. But what we had to do is also get these folks to buy into analytics. And so we went on this path of selling analytics to the entire company. There's a lot of value in selling analytics, obviously getting people to buy into analytics. One of the things I also can tell you is if your partner across the table from you understands analytics as well as he possibly can, that allows you to absolutely push the envelope on sophistication and drive even more value. But there's another piece that evangelics brings to an organization. Like everything with analytics, what analytics is doing is simply allowing you to increase your odds of making a better decision. That's it. It never guarantees the right decision every single time. And by getting people to buy into analytics, it'll allow you to survive those situations where you went ahead and made the right decision but had the wrong outcome. A simple football analogy, imagine it's fourth down and you have 8 yards to go to get a first down and you're on your own 30-yard line. So you recognize the fact by using analytics, there's no way you should go for that fourth down, and you go and kick a field goal. The kicker misses it. Does that mean the analytics were bad, or does it just simply mean you had the wrong outcome but the right decision? And that's how you need to think about analytics, and that's how you need to get your company to think about analytics. Look for those areas where you can get people to buy into it, so when you do have that situation where you have the wrong outcome but the right decision, you can work through it and still continue to get the buy-in. At Disney, one of the things that we do is we actually hold a conference, an annual conference every year. This past year was our 16th year in holding a conference. We had 1,300 folks there. It's a three-day conference that actually has four tracks in all 3 days. The first day is totally for Disney folks only, where we can share IP. It also allows us to take some of our success stories and have our clients present it to our other clients. Because one of the things that we learned is if they just hear it from us, it's not enough. When they hear it from the client, you get a lot more buy-in. And then for the next 2 days, we open it up to the general public. And what this allows us to do is a couple things. One, it allows us to brand us as an analytics company for people outside Disney. And also allows people to see how much we invest into our employees when it comes to analytics. It also allows us to bring in outside parties to be guest speakers where we can learn beyond what we've learned within our own organization. And so the analytics and the conference has been a huge success for us and continues to grow. Speed to market. So the value of analytics is so great. In fact, you saw what it did at People Express in under a year. It actually put us in bankruptcy or the opportunity to merge with Continental Airlines. So the value of analytics is so great, you want to find a way to get out there as quickly as possible, even if it isn't the best solution, as long as it's a better solution than you have today. I'll give you a simple analogy we had at Disney at one point. In parks and resorts, if you called our res center and you asked for one of our resorts, let's say the Grand Floridian, which is one of our premium resorts, and if it wasn't available, our alternate logic at the time was simply alphabetical. Clearly doesn't make any sense, right? Unfortunately, we had no data to tell us what the right sequence was, but we knew alphabetical was not right. Basically, that would mean if you asked for the Grand Floridian, it wasn't available. We went straight to the A's, which was All-Star Resorts, which is a value resort. Probably not the same product that the guest is looking for the Grand Floridian. So what we did instead was, because we had no data, we grabbed all our top sales agents from our res center and all our senior executives and brought them in a room, and we went resort by resort. Given your experience, what do you think the best answer is, knowing that All-Star Resorts isn't right? And we did that for all our resorts. And again, we saw a significant lift by having a relevant product to our guests as soon as possible. And then as we started collecting data, now we're able to actually put what we call today our personalization product, where we're able to optimize real time while a guest is on the phone or online, the right product, the right content, and the right imagery to get the most relevant piece of information from the guest as soon as possible. Basically, what we do now with my team is we leverage all those learnings across the entire enterprise to help with the speed to market. So as an example, when we have a new show on Broadway, as you can imagine, there's no data. So how do you sponsor it? How do you warm start the data? Very similar problem we have with Disney Cruise Line. When we open up a new itinerary, how do we leverage that? Recognize there's no data to that new itinerary. So how do you take advantage of the learnings we had for the Broadway shows or the learnings from studios and bring it to Disney Cruise Line? How do we take the learnings from the marketing ROI that we do for our media companies to our studios? That's the kind of work we continue to try to do. At ESPN, several years ago, the NCAA championships never happened before. It's the first time we had an actual championship. How do you think about the Nielsen ratings on something that never happened before? Again, all these problems are very similar to each other, and how do you leverage the learnings across the enterprise to provide that speed to market? Talent. So people often ask me, you know, when you guys are looking for talent, what do you look for? And you know, there's the obvious, you know, someone with a strong analytic background, great storyteller. But the one piece that I would also argue is a piece that's often missed. And that is, I always think of the population of the world into two buckets, thermometers and thermostats. Thermometers are great at telling you, hey, there's a risk ahead, or hey, here's an opportunity. But then that's all they do. A thermostat does the exact same thing, identifies those risks and opportunities, and does something about it. And so when you can find those thermostats, if you will, they're the ones that are going to drive value for your company. And when you're in analytics and you know it's changing as fast as it is, you need a lot of thermostats, not a lot of thermometers. The importance of integration. So as I mentioned before, integration is absolutely critical to make have a success story when it comes to applying analytics. So if you think about some of the challenges you may have, I've yet to have a situation where my science team could not solve it. Frankly, if we're going to mess it up, it's because we didn't appropriately integrate it into the business or didn't understand the business problem to begin with. So imagine a situation where you have, you know, you have great analytics and great science, and then but the end users don't get any of it. So there's this huge gap to what we define between producing results and ability to consume results. And what we're trying to do, particularly in the MSI world, is figure out how to mitigate that gap. How do you diminish that gap as much as possible? So situation, imagine if I'm sitting here and I go in front of one of our clients and say, hey, here's your business problem. This is how we solved it. The odds of them actually embracing that model and taking those results are very, very slim. No different than we think about Tony Stark.
What?
Great example of bad integration between the business problem and the science. This is how it's supposed to look when you integrate appropriately.
One.
So one of the things we'll even do is we have an end client that's been using Excel their whole life, and then we build a sophisticated model. Believe it or not, what we'll actually do with that front end, that user influence, the UI, if you will, we'll make it look just like the Excel spreadsheet. So there's almost little transition between the old world and the new world. While there may be great sophistication behind the scenes, we want to make that gap between what we're actually providing and what they're able to intake as little as possible. And believe it or not, that Excel spreadsheet may actually help them do that, or at least that look and feel of an Excel spreadsheet. Law of averages. This is probably one of my favorite discussions. I don't know if anyone's ever read the book called The Flaw of Averages by Sam Savage. If you have not done so, I strongly recommend it. This is probably one of the greatest books out there to find immediate opportunities within your organization. If you sit back right now and think about the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of decisions that are going on in your organization right now without data or simply by using averages, all those are opportunities. And I suggest reading this book. It'll give you great insights on how to think about the flaw of averages. A simple example would be if you go back to the Air Force back in the 40s and early 50s, the United States Air Force went from propellers to jets. And in that transition, one of the things they had to do was build the perfect cockpit. By doing so, they measured hundreds of pilots across 10 different dimensions to really understand what does the average pilot look like. And so they built what they thought was the perfect cockpit for those pilots, not recognizing the flaw of averages. What happened is these jets started rolling out, they started having multiple crashes. They started to realize something's going on here. So they checked the mechanics. It wasn't mechanical error. So then they started checking to figure out, and they started leaning more and more towards pilot error. What they started to quickly realize, it wasn't necessarily pilot error. And so they hired someone to come in, and they measured the folks, all the pilots again. See, maybe something changed over those 10 years from when they started. What they found was the pilot size didn't change at all. But what they did was they went out and measured 1,000 different pilots, and they found not one pilot actually looked like the average. Not one. And so what they had to do was reinvent the whole cockpit and make sure everything is now adjustable. So believe it or not, now, and that change in the era was the invention of the adjustable seat that's now in our car. But they also have the adjustable yoke, the adjustable pedals. And it made all those changes and eliminated all the crashes that were going on. So simply by following the laws of using averages can certainly come back and bite you. And I suggest you think about any place you're making decisions on averages, think about the flaw of averages in two events. One is the distribution around those averages. What does that mean? And the second is, what's the cost of being wrong if it's too high or too low? And take that into account. In this case here, obviously, the cost is very high given the lives of the pilots that had to fly these planes. The last area I'm going to talk about is the growth of analytics. As I mentioned before, I've been doing this for almost 30 years, actually 31 years now, and I continue to see analytics grow in many different areas. So when we start about analytics, at least when I think of the start of analytics, I often have a tendency to go to revenue management, which is where I got started, and the application of decision science and solving one of those problems within the airline industry, which spread into the hotels and car rentals and so on. From there, you start seeing pricing as an area of opportunity for analytics. You see more and more analytics supporting pricing. Marketing ROI is another obvious one. Sales optimization, something new. You're starting to hear about personalization more and more. How do you provide that most relevant product to your consumer as fast as possible? Finance, obviously, with the risk assessments and things like that. But even finance, I would argue, still has huge opportunity. Many of the decisions are still made off of averages. Can you move them away from averages? One of the areas that's been particularly interesting for me is human resources. You're seeing more and more analytics being applied here. If you get a chance, Google a gentleman, University of Penn, Adam Grant. He has what he calls people analytics. He's done a couple TED Talks on it. And how do you think about analytics when you're hiring and as well as retention within your organization? Fascinating individual, fascinating videos, huge area of opportunity for any company. And then lastly, even on creative content, how do you measure the creative content? How can you improve upon that creative content? So to give you a quote from John Lasseter, art challenges technology, technology inspires art. So when we think about that balance between art and science, this is how we think about it. But when you think about some of the movies that Disney's produced recently, Frozen's a great example. When you think about the science behind how do you make the snow look real? When you think of behind the water in Moana, how do you make the water look real? Or when you watch the movie Up and the balloons are bouncing and that randomness of the balloons looks so real. Again, it's all science. And so when you think about all these various opportunities, don't just limit yourself to your own area. Branch across all the various millions of decisions that were made across your company and where you can take analytics to drive a better business decision. So with that, I'll end with this quote from Ron Charon. Any organization that is not a math house now or is unable to become one soon is already a legacy company. Trust me, on my end, having been on the receiving end of analytics that people express, I swore I'd never be there again. I strongly encourage you to embrace analytics, the evangelization of analytics, and spread it across your organization. With that, I thank you all very much.